Oh, hey there. I am Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are pop culture scholar Karen Thompson.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers. Hello, hello, 2019.
We have no winter, so you have to, like, pick it
Somebody
all up.
Somebody has to, yes. Hello. I paused for a long time because I wasn't sure where to insert the double hello.
That's fair. And we also have a very special guest, but a returning guest, one we love. She is writer and comedian Tara Jepsen.
Hi, Guy.
Hello, Tara. Thanks so much
it's
for
Tara.
Joining. I'm sorry, Tara.
That's okay. I just wanted to say it early on. Okay.
That's fair. I should have remembered. Last time I saw you was at your very delightful show here in Los Angeles, where I also saw Karen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I and where you killed. The audience.
Yes. We had we each had our roles in making a beautiful night.
Tell people who are in Los Angeles, who are visiting Los Angeles, what the show is.
Oh, Josh is a comedy night. It's like a roving free comedy house party. And sometimes it's inside, sometimes it's outside, but it's always at somebody's place. And somehow we keep finding people who are willing to let us into their homes. We have a really gorgeous one coming this month in January 12th in Pasadena. And Kate Berlant's doing it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, Pallavi Gunalan and a few others, but we're excited about it. You can find me on Instagram, and I can tell you the address and stuff.
Does Josh have its own Twitter or Instagram, or just people
no,
should follow
should
you?
No, we always are debating, are like, is that dumb to have 50 different accounts for 50 different things?
And also, like, you have a partner in Josh.
Michelle T.
The great Michelle
the
T.
The best, one of my best friends in the world. Yeah, she's the greatest.
But it's really great. I, of course, guys, have been gone for months and months. I am back. Thanks so much for keeping the home fires burning while I was away, Karen Thompson.
Well, see, everyone was just so knocked out while you were gone, like that everybody's like been felled by their illnesses. And, you know, because we were working so hard while you were away, guys.
That's understandable. I was just having a good time seeing the sights in London, Paris, Brussels and Amsterdam. And of course, but before that, I went to Mendocino with my mom and niece, and they recorded their Pop Rocket debuts. They talked about the pop culture we had been consuming. We talked a little bit about Schitt's Creek. And then I called to tell them that they were in the episode. And my mom let me know that they had already listened to it.
Wow.
And it was the first time they had listened to Pop Rocket. So now my mom and my niece have listened to Pop Rocket, but never when I was on the show.
Oh, well, of course they listen when they're on the show.
I mean, you've gotta manage your own media presence. I get that. I respect it.
What was your favorite discovery of your European journey this time around?
I mean, look, a beautiful sea of British game shows. Mm. Like, I mean, everything Louis Vertel is loving and bringing back. Do you remember when Louis played that game to you?
Yeah.
From Pointless? So the idea is you have to name something that qualifies within a category, but it's the opposite of the Family Feud. No, like, it has to be correct, but as few people as possible knew it when they polled people.
Uh-huh.
And when I watched it in Britain, it was like pop stars and that sort of thing. And then there was a French version of it where they were doing popes. And
oh,
I was
nice.
Like, that says so much about French pop culture.
Lovely.
Coming up on this week's show, we're going to talk about pop culture resolutions. Plus, we're each going to be sharing our latest jams. But first, let us find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Karen Thompson, Dr. Karen Thompson. What are you all about this week?
Netflix won the holiday interregnum. That is the period between Christmas and New Year. And they did it largely because of a little movie called Bird Box. And even if you hated Bird Box, even if you're like, what the fuck is this? There was no question that you were watching it between the 25th and the 1st. Usually, it mostly, I called the 26th Bird Boxing Day because I feel like, you know, like I looked at my social media feed because I'd felt like sluggish. I don't know what I'm doing. And I realized basically everyone's talking about Bird Box because they're watching it that day.
I love the Wild West way that we don't know what Netflix does correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And things like To All the Boys I've Loved Before, like, breaks open this idea of 2 years from now, are we all just going to be watching the light comedy or rom-com that they give us on, you know, on Friday evenings. Or the notion of owning the holiday interregnum. What a beautiful cultural concept, but also what a beautiful space for Netflix to step into.
Absolutely. I mean, well, for those of you who somehow missed all of this, Bird Box is the kind of big
feature. If they were blindfolded, yes, maybe?
Perhaps, if you were blindfolded and floating down a river. Anyway, it's a big feature film starring Sandra Bullock. And it's directed by real prestige director Suzanne Beer, who's the Danish film director whose film In a Better World won the Academy Award, was the first woman to win a European Film Award, and is based on a really popular dystopian novel by Josh Malerman. Anyway, the minute that this film came out, it actually appeared on Netflix on December 21st, but everybody's busy shopping, preparing their holiday foods, preparing their holiday playlists. So really, people didn't have the time to kind of sit down and have this, what the great historian Benedict Anderson would call an imagined community. And he'd talk about this moment in the morning everywhere around the world where people would take their newspapers open and be reading the same things. Mm-hmm. And that was an imagined community moment, a monocultural moment where it's just like, you know, I looked at your story, Tara, on Instagram, and I was like, they're sitting on the couch watching Bird Box, and they're like storifying about it on Instagram. So
mainly my spouse was doing that because they found themselves disgusted.
Why?
Well, I think that they just thought it was boring. And Christina's an editor, so her mm-hmm. brain, anytime we were watching anything, is just like dissecting everything. I suppose that anybody in entertainment does that, but I feel like I'm much more mood motivated. Like Christina's career motivated. I'm just like, if I'm in a good mood, I'm up for it. It didn't matter that it was just like, okay, I was fully on board for being on the couch and like enjoying that movie.
I also feel like visual artists or people like that have a sense of like moment and speed and stuff that I don't necessarily have because I like a story and that's what matters to me. And sometimes when I deal with like, you know, friends who are editors and really like roller coasters, like they have different expectations out of a movie than me.
Absolutely.
I just enjoyed that the movie was there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that, yes. Like, I don't know that I, like, loved it in the end. I think there are a lot of funny other conversations that arose. It's just sort of like, you know, how did Tom get his hair perfectly cut with that fade? You know, was Sandy doing that? Anyway. But I do think that it was just, I appreciated there was something of quality that I could easily access, or potentially of quality with big stars, what have you, entertaining, that I could access at my fingertips without much effort.
I am excited that there is another bargaining territory for A-list actresses over 40, that like HBO is not the only place you can go to say, give me money, I will give you quality.
Yes.
I have not watched it because I do not like horror films, but I have read...
It's not that... I don't either, but I still yes. watched it.
Well, also, it just... It felt so interestingly derivative that we had the Can't Talk movie and now we have the can't see movie. Yeah.
What's next?
Karen and I are working on a film where aliens smell very strongly.
The revival of Smell-O-Vision. It had to come at some point.
Tara, what are you all about this week?
I wrote that I saw that Louis C.K. thing.
We are getting high, doing fucking mushrooms and shit. And then older people were like, you gotta get your shit together. And we were like, yeah, fuck you. And I was kind of excited to be in my 50s and see people in their 20s and be like, they're crazy. These kids are nuts, but they're not. They're fucking, they're just boring. Fucking telling them, you shouldn't say that. What are you, an old lady? What the fuck are you doing? Appropriate. Fuck you, you're a child. Why are you finger fucking each other and doing jello shots? Like, why aren't you? You should address me. They're like royalty, they tell you what to call them.
Fuck them.
You should address me as they, them. Because I identify as gender neutral. Oh, okay. Okay. You should address me as there, because I identify as a location. And the location is your mother's cunt.
It does feel like one of those things like Mitt Romney where you're like, do you really talk about it? Do you dignify it with a response, or do you just keep going?
I mean, we got two comics in the room. Let's talk about the, like, do you feel like posting a bootleg of somebody working stuff out on a weeknight is fair game?
Well, in the case of Louis C.K., yeah, because I feel like it's okay to put him under more scrutiny than the average person. I feel like I don't feel that he's done enough to, I don't know if I just sound so cheesed out by saying this, but I don't feel like he's done enough to elevate women comics or to sort of show an awareness or do anything after all of his transgressions to really merit his time on stage or attention. I just don't. I think that he's... So if they put something out where he just sounds like a right-wing dumbass, you know, if he's just like the Tucker Carlson of comedy now, then he should be recognized as such. Like, that seemed way worse than just working on something out.
Well, okay, the thing is I had straight guy friends who were very like, you can't do that. He is just working on material. That's not stuff that is like ready for consumption. I ended up going and listening to the entirety, not of the 12:25 set or whatever it was, but there was a set from a week before, just because what was being reported was the stuff about the Parkland survivors and non-binary people. But then Bowen Yang was like, I just heard about the Asian stuff. And I was like, what's the Asian stuff? And no one was reporting it. So I went and listened to the entire thing. And it was so weird because it was just so like, this person we were lauding for being delicate and nuanced was doing bad 2005 comedy, the worst of 2005 comedy, and also like doing an extended bit about, I don't know if my fag or my Jew faggot doctor needs to be touching me as much as he is. And it's a little bit like, you can't really do a bit about somebody transgressing their like socially acceptable like contact in the wake of you having done that with people without dealing with it. It felt so strange. And the thing is like, you know, a bunch of comics were going off about how you shouldn't bootleg stuff and about how it wasn't ready to be seen and you're stealing from somebody. And it's more just like, why is he being this person? Why does our National Council of People in Charge of Stand-Up always have to be that guy?
Seriously.
But that's where the kind of, like, the structural argument of, like, yes, you shouldn't be bootlegging stuff and stealing something, you know, that's a structural argument. But, fundamentally, like, what you see, like, the content sort of trumps the structure in this situation. Yes. Insofar as it's just sort of like, you know... I don't think we're judging whether or not he's funny or being funny or like basically judging his comedy as a kind of performance or as an aesthetic necessarily. I think that what's happening is that we're just in shock at like, you know, how, I don't know, vitriolic. I mean, whatever. There's good vitriolic comedy, but how like dumb it is.
Yes. No.
How dumb.
The thing is
dumb.
It's not it like. The vitriol is only in motivation, yeah. Not in execution in any way. Mm. The jokes that he was doing about Asian men are like the worst of 2005.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it is just any bad show would be presenting you with that, and like there are people who are like, you know, it's like why is this person who had so much potential. Somebody who tried so hard, mm-hmm. even if he was in many ways terrible, he tried very hard, just sort of like not trying and being that mean-spirited.
It's a fascinating study in like a kind of masculinity in the Trump era, if you want to call it that, because I think that that's the most common reactionary gesture that we see, especially from white men, is that they feel aggrieved, and when they feel aggrieved, they lash out at everybody else and blame everybody else, all minorities, all people who are different, and you know they act like they're. Territory has been encroached upon, and so what does one do but demonize those communities again because you've had something taken from you?
But like that, it's such an interesting illustration of the idea of you can't be mad at me saying this terrible thing because I'm one of the good ones. I don't like Trump. And you have this guy who is an icon of I don't like Trump, but is still coming around and like just re-participating in the worst kinds of reiteration of bad stereotypes, and then throwing a couple more, like the ones that got news are just the dickishnesses we haven't seen before. And I hate that Louis C.K.'s perspective is like, but I'm one of the good ones. It's like such a great illustration of what's wrong with, but I'm one of the good ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. That's really well said. Yeah, it seems like, you know, when he was being a more sensitive person or when... And I'm just using a shorthand to refer to, like, his TV show, a lot of his stand-up that was supposed to be him showing us his complexity, his wrestling with his baser instincts and his intellect, and that there was this combination of being kind of a gross little animal and then being someone who knew that he was that, and that therein laid this, like, honesty that a million other people do. But it was such a relief coming from this straight guy that he had that level of self-awareness. And
let's be clear, Tara hangs out with skateboarders on a regular basis. She can deal with gross little animals.
I have five brothers. I love a dickhead. And I'm, you know, and I'm a townie and my own kind of shithead too. I love dummies. This dummy I don't love. I feel like, you know, there is Louis C.K. and even some of the accusations leverage at other male comics were basically saying, you know, is there sort of like wokeness or their feminism put on? Is it them trying to cater to women in this particular way that they think that will be charming, like bringing a baby to a park or something, you know, like that seeing them will just be like, oh my God, it's like amazing and I need to hug it or fuck it or whatever. And so I'm like, okay, is this him just laying down the pretense that he even has to work anymore? Is he like, you know what, it doesn't work anymore. I'm just going to be the garbage person I am, the end. I don't need to try and be smarter than this. And before that, he was trying to be smarter than that. That's one of my thoughts with that set. And then it also just seems like to people who are saying, should we be recording people who are workshopping? It's like, is that really your workshop? You just start at this just like horrible, wildly prejudiced, racist garbage. Like, that's what, where's it getting worked out to? Is it going to be more racist?
That's my response. That's my response to other comics is like, really, would you be starting? The thing is, they none of the people who are saying that would go in with something so informed. He's Louis C.K. He knows how a room works enough to understand whether something is a real joke or not. And I understand the laziness of walking in with half a notion and then just seeing how half a notion plays out on stage. But also, considering his past year, he doesn't get that latitude.
Like, exactly.
He could have spent two more weeks in his house with a laptop and found things that were at least new or, you know, like subversions of the things that he's just reiterating, you know?
Yep. Oh, I totally agree.
Okay. Mine's going to be bad because my all about this week is just I experienced a lot of delightful pop culture while I was gone. In London, I saw Patti LuPone in company with gender reversed lead, like so much. When the cast album comes out, we'll talk about that fully. But I'd lined up Too Much Theater in London, but while I was there, I went to a dry cleaner's and I saw an ad for some sort of gay play. And I had just gotten into a fight on Twitter, sort of yelling at gay guys for not supporting art by gay men as much as we do art by women. Ooh. And I was like, I have to go. And then I found out it is a 7-hour long, two-night play loosely based on Howard's End.
Whoa.
Yes, and it was one of those situations where I needed my super friend so badly because I was like, the ways that Karen Tongson would go into that with like, like all cultural knowledge and investment necessary to be able to evaluate it on all terms, Margaret Wappler would be able to sit there and say, yes, but are there ideas here? And Winter Mitchell would be able to sit down and say, is this entertaining? And then after about an hour and a half, leave and look at her phone. because it was this thing that was, it is called The Inheritance by Matthew Lopez, written by a gay man of color, but very much rooted in white New York gays. Like, Hillary losing is a moment in the play. Like, and it's basically about a couple breaking apart and being brought back together in ways by real estate and sort of like the cultural the cultural relationship between gay men who are around 35 today and the generation of gay men who were lost to the AIDS crisis. And E.M. Forster is a character in the first half. And
is this like Howard's End Millennium Approaches?
Okay. The degree to which this play thought it was Angels in America was a little bit like, hold up, buddy. Also, at one point, one of the characters is deemed insane because he wrote a 400-page play and then sent it out to everyone. And it's like, I did the math and I was like, oh, wait, this is a 400-page yeah. play. And it didn't have enough of a sense of irony about it. The thing is that at the end of the first night, I was rocked by the huge ideas that this guy was engaging with when it came to how do we tell stories about gay men? We haven't gotten to tell stories for a long time. And like the presence of Forster to sort of like use those tools of the novel that work for white gay guys. White gay guys who have the ability to pretend like everything's fine by looking normal, having somebody dig in and go through their heads. These things were really useful. The second half of the play, my respect diminished. Like, there was punitive HIV, not given to the guy who was fun, but given to someone close to the guy who was fun. The guy who was fun, spoiler alert, does get killed. Like, there were all of the good...
I like punitive HIV as a concept.
Punitive HIV is an important part of gay male stories over the past 30 years. But it was just seeing somebody really run up against the questions of telling stories about people like me and succeeding in some ways and failing in other ways. And it was not unlike Nanette. I've thought about it so much, and I don't know that I agree with it, you know?
Yeah.
It was the thing, of all of the things that I consumed, that I was really, in the way that I forced you guys to watch Looking, I was like, if only I could force Pop Rocket to watch this play, they would all be so mad at me. All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about our pop culture resolutions for 2019. For example, will we all agree to binge watch 90 Day Fiancé so we too can talk about the fight Colt and Larissa had that led to her arrest? You'll soon find out.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts, only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who shot ya? The podcast that dares to say that white dudes' opinions aren't the only opinions.
If you have a movie pass, like, get a ticket to it to support Taraji, then go home.
Ant-Man seems so unnecessary at this point. Ant-Man is like a ketchup packet too many.
Who shot ya? With Ricky Carmona.
I wanted to see Wolverine kick ass and eat some popcorn and have a good time.
Alonzo Duralde.
Is this Andy Richter?
Yeah!
Andy, oh my God!
And April Wolf.
I love Wild Things because we get to see Kevin Bacon's dick.
Who shot ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. It is a podcast where we talk about pop culture. I am your host, Guy Branum, and with me in the studio are the other panelists. Their names are...
Tara Jepsen.
And Karen Tongson.
And in our first episode of 2019, we are obliged to talk about New Year's resolutions. This is a pop culture show, so for this particular exercise, we will be limiting ourselves to pop culture resolutions. Anyone who resolves to go to the gym more in 2019 will get a timeout unless they are only going to the gym to have the opportunity to watch more Anderson Cooper at around 6 to 6:30. All right, before we launch into our resolutions for 2019, it's important for us to own up to whether or not we were successful in sticking to our previous resolutions from last year. Tara, we don't have yours recorded, so you just have to be honest. We have to take you at face value like the Senate took Brett Kavanaugh. Karen, how are you with sticking to your pop culture resolutions?
I totally fucking kicked ass. I didn't completely quit getting my news from social media platforms. Mm-hmm. We last did this New Year's resolution show in 2017, so I guess I've had like a wide berth to do that. And frankly, I subscribe to a newspaper. I supported the news. I'm a subscriber to the Los Angeles Times now. And sure, I barely read all of the weekend papers that I get. But it makes me see stories that I would otherwise skip over because the kind of social media megaphone hasn't, you know, kind of pushed it through. It's just sort of like, what? This is going on, you know, like in Italy, or like this particular right-wing government is rising in South America, you know, like it makes me pay more attention. So I did do that. I did fulfill that. I also, I said that I wanted to read more trades just because to keep up with what's going on with the business of show here in Los Angeles. And so I do read the THR, and I also, I promised in 2017 to re-up my subscription to Entertainment Weekly, which I did, now I am oppressed by how many Entertainment Weeklies I do not get to read. So I just, like, this weekend, for the holiday, New Year's, for example, I just brought, like, five Entertainment Weeklies untouched with me to the desert, read a lot of them, but mostly just took pleasure in seeing other people read them.
What's the aspect of Entertainment Weekly that you enjoy most?
What I enjoy is that it's a pretty comprehensive, like, weekly account, multi-genre, multi-platform. And, you know, like, some people say that its framings are a little fuddy-duddy, but to me, I think the writing has always been pretty sharp. It may not be the kind of most finger-on-the-pulse dame on the block, but they do a good job of alerting you to the major releases of what's going on.
As Gen Xers, we need a little structure.
I think we do need some structure, especially with, again, I'm using this phrase again. It's a theme because my class is going to be about the end of monoculture this spring on popular culture. And, you know, we just don't have a shared water, like many shared water cooler moments anymore. And I think what Entertainment Weekly does is that it manages to sift through a lot of stuff to say, hey, here's some stuff that seems pretty water coolery.
Tara, have you ever had pop culture resolutions? Have you ever thought about them?
No, I haven't had pop culture resolutions, and I don't do any resolutions. I'm just one of those people that's like, I don't know, it seems like another day to me.
You're on your goddamn journey?
Yeah, what is it? It sounds very Lutheran, doesn't it?
I 2 years ago when we did this, I said I was going to catch up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Did not. I said I was going to stop reading listicles, which I kind of did. Also, the thing I think is funny is that I resolved to seek out more female, queer, and POC film critics, and I have read so much more of them over the course of the past 2 years, but that's just because the world has made them so much more accessible to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was a really cool video that had our old friend Alonzo on it a couple of days ago that was, like, queer, female, and people of color film critics talking about what needed to change about film criticism, and it was, like, exciting that we're opening up the conversation. God knows the conversation isn't opened up enough. Like, at the end of the day, official reaction to a film is pretty much going to be what Peter Travers is a bad example, but, like, it's going to be most of the time a white straight guy.
A.O. Scott.
It's going to be A.O. Scott. But, you know, it's nice that we have more Elvis Mitchells in the mix. It's nice that Manola Dargis's matter more. And I'm getting to see so much more of them. And you know, younger film critics.
April Wolf's and Alonzo Duralde's matter
more. Yes, absolutely. Those are better examples. And then I said that I would, if I started an article in the LA Times, Washington Post, or New York Times, I had to finish it. And I have not remotely done that.
I noticed you didn't challenge yourself by saying, if I start an article in the New Yorker, I will have to finish it.
Oh, God, no.
Tara, if you had one in the past, mm-hmm. what do you think it would have been?
I think...
like from like the previous year.
I mean, a few years ago, I did realize that I wasn't reading enough books, that I really was just looking at stuff online. And I've always loved to read and been a big reader. And I just had a moment of being horrified that my life had become that. And I was like, I'm starting to read more. And that's definitely happened. I read so many great books this last year. Uh-huh. I read Priest Daddy by Patricia Lockwood, which I loved. I just read Homegoing by Yagi Yassi. I don't remember the name of the book I'm reading right now. I'm a little lukewarm on it, and that shows. But that's been fantastic.
I read our book club book this year, but I will say that my first official pop culture resolution is to read the Pop Rocket Summer Book Club book to completion.
Well, that's funny that you guys are both talking about reading, because that is one of my 2019 pop culture resolutions is that our book club this year and my binge reading of Crazy Rich Asians and the whole trilogy reminded me of how much I just enjoyed reading for pleasure. And I know that I've talked a lot on the show about how I have to read so much for work that, you know, the kind of fun has been sucked out of it. But frankly, like the kind of frothiness of the Crazy Rich Asians trilogy led me, like, you know, I'm just like, I should be doing that more. When I have a break, I should be doing that more instead of trying to catch up on this or that, or like, you know, watching Bird Box or what have you. And so I do want to read more as one of my resolutions. And I want to start with actually a couple of books that were gifted to me by a Rocketeer who happens to also be a subscriber to Max Fun, supporting our show, and who is an editor at Viking Press. And when I started the semester this last year, I had a package of books waiting for me.
That's lovely.
From LT. I'm not going to reveal your true identity so you don't get harassed. But from LT. And the books were from two Pinay authors. And their books ended up making all of these like best of 2018 lists. And those two books are Elaine Castillo's America Is Not in the Heart, which is a play on the Carlos Bulacan novel, the classic Filipino novel. And it's her debut novel. It's set in the 1990s. And so the kind of agricultural workers of Bulacan's world have been transformed into now like overworked nurses, doctors, surgeons, turned security guards who can't use their medical degrees here in this country. Anyway, it's set in the Bay Area. You'd be interested in this guy, pre-Silicon Valley Milpitas. Mm-hmm. So, and then another book that I'd be interested in is also, the other book that came in that package was from Idra Novi, and it's called Those Who Knew. And that's set in a kind of unnamed island nation with a kind of political, a dubious political figure at the heart of it. So anyway, thank you, LT, for those books. One of my resolutions is to read them because I'm going to read more in 2019.
This year I read more than I had previously, because the book came out, but also I was paying more attention to the publishing industry, and it made me aware of things that I wouldn't have otherwise been aware of, because we don't think about books enough. And I read more, but I also mainly read nonfiction. So one of my resolutions is to read more fiction, and a subset of that is also nonfiction by gay guys, because it sort of is amazing to me that the Pulitzer last year or the year before was won by Less, by the novel Less, by I forget the dude's name. But it's, you don't have to look for it, Karen. I failed, and that's my fault. But just a really beautiful novel about being a middle-aged gay man and the fears that go along with that. And I mean, I talked about it on the show before, but the energy that suffused it really was like a feeling that you're not enough. And there are so many gay men who are looking for reflections in literature, but not in culture, but not looking in culture made by gay men. Laura, our responsible producer, his name is Andrew Sean Greer. He's from the Bay Area, and he's great, and he's writing another novel. I have Blue Boy by Rakesh Satyal, like, just in my house waiting for me. And I want to take down more fiction this year because part of my, like, dry and spectrumy brain is that, you know, I just read a really great book by Sarah Schulman called Gentrification of the Mind.
Oh, yeah.
That is, like, so full of ideas and wonderful, but also, like, that or reading something that is a memoir or history, I can sort of, like, cleanly go through and parse. And, I want to get swept along on those journeys. Tara, we yes. are forcing you to resolve something for this year.
Oh, sure. I did put together some resolutions. You know, I'm feeling the dread that I think a lot of people are feeling with the presidential campaigning that is coming at us hot. And thinking that my pop culture resolution is to properly gird my Twitter loins so that I can handle these things and not feel just like I hate everyone ever by seeing everyone's political opinions or seeing what they believe about various political candidates or watching everyone process what's Elizabeth Warren running and all that stuff. I just feel like my soul still feels so crushed from what we're going through that imagining this campaigning just seems so brutal.
Heating up of it, yeah.
Yes, and also watching everybody talk about all the dumb candidates and having to see people consider Bernie and all that kind of stuff. I just feel like dying when I see that.
So, what do you think the rules are going to be? What are the techniques that you're going to use?
To use your typical muting, your keywords, your blocking, your unfriending, just all of the standard engagement strategies. And I don't know. Does a person? I don't. Yeah, I'm not going to ever delete Twitter. I just need to find a way to go into that fray without wanting to throw boulders.
I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's at once Twitter feels like a space where you can just, at least for me, it feels like you can just spout off your particular opinion about, you know, this thing that's upsetting you, whether or not it's like during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings or, you know, just sort of like I had like basically a constant stream of vitriol and mm-hmm. hot takes and what have you. And it feels like a more emotional and immediate place to for that. But I also see wanting to just see people flossing or doing like various, you know, various fun memes, you know, like me, a homosexual or whatever, you know.
Right. I've been trying to add more comedians too, since I follow so many journalists and thinkers and various people of that ilk that I'm just like, I gotta add people that are just like saying stupid shit.
I worry that there is a conservatism to the safety of Instagram. Mm. Because there is always that temptation to just go to a nice place where pretty fun people are doing pretty fun things.
Yes. Ceramics, good food, puppies.
And I like
succulents.
It's hard because I've always been such a discourse oriented person that now, as I sort of start questioning some of these like base beliefs of like speech combats speech and, you know, all of that. That there is just the safety of going to Instagram and like, look, it's a hot gay guy. He is in Rio de Janeiro for New Year's. What could be wrong? Like having to dose how much you give yourself that candy and how much you go and have to, we fight about everything always.
Cold bath water. I know. Well, but especially as you were explaining too that, you know, you were in like some you were at the center of this heated conversation about like consuming more gay culture. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's like one thing that you say can become like a lightning rod for a lot of different opinions. And, I find that the minute that something really hostile or negative comes my way, it's like insta-block, insta-mute. And, you know, I don't have a huge Twitter following. I don't grow that following because I would rather feel somewhat safe than to have like insane like white supremacist homophobes like coming at me, talking to me about my appearance and shit like that, like in response to the political things I say.
I have found that having that craziness come at me has made me approach, like, I feel like it's mostly bad, but I've grown a little bit. Like, E. Alex Jung, in response to the Louis C.K. thing, posted about how the talking shit at East Asians wasn't even covered. And I made a sassy joke in response to it that implied a level of, like, and I just knew that after that I needed to say, this is just a joke. I do not mean to be reinforcing these ideas. I am making fun of the perspective of comics who are doing it. And it's like, you may be like, do we really need to do that? But you want to know what? It meant that I made my stupid joke and nobody misunderstood. Yeah. And why not just walk along?
I think it's because it's so hard to convey tone on the different media that we have and the different platforms that we have, including like over text message. You know, sometimes like a laconic remark is gonna be bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's gonna end up like, you know, it's like me getting like emotional every time my mom is just like, I see, or okay, period. And I'm just like, she just doesn't know how to frickin' text. You know, it's not that she is like being cold and withdrawn. It's like, you know, or that she's acting all hurt or whatever when she's like, I see. You know, it's like, it's gotta read the tone. I project a tone onto it. And I think that, like, having, you know, whatever, something to indicate tone more clearly. It's like an accent mark over a note when you're reading music. You know, it's like, that's all that it
very
is.
Very nice.
Okay, here's a resolution. I, during the periods of time that I hang out with my mom, usually it's just around Christmas, maybe a little bit other times, I am going to make pop culture dates with her so that we have things to commune about. Because over the course of the past year, Schitt's Creek and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel have done so much to give us a, like, to do the thing that culture is supposed to do, where, like, you enjoy something together and are able to have reactions so that it's not just personal attacks on each other, but it is being able to see them through their consumption of the culture. Where are you guys? Have you gotten through Mrs. Maisel season 2 yet?
I've watched all of it.
What about you?
I haven't watched season 2. I watched season 1.
But you told a very funny joke about Mrs. Maisel, or RBG and Mrs. Maisel.
What a great insight. Thank God somebody made that insight. Those women would have both been in on the Upper West Side at the same time. I want to know this joke.
Well, I just felt like when I saw the preview for the RBG movie, it felt, I didn't feel excited to see it. And I want to consume everything about on the basis of sex. And I really want to hear and read anything about her. But it looks so flat and so uninspired.
So goyisha. That's the word that you're looking for. Goyisha.
Yes. It does.
Sorry, but finish.
But yeah, but essentially I was like, it looks like an extended episode of Mrs. Maisel. I can't do it. It just feels like such a snore. And also, you know, that show, as Emily Nussbaum pointed out, that show and that movie both cast Goyim as these characters. And I don't know. I don't see any substance in Felicity Jones. I don't see that, like, weight, that gravitas, that intelligence, all the things that you love about RBG. And a certain friend of ours who was up to direct that movie, one of her thoughts about it is she was like, they didn't show any of her sense of humor. Like, there was just no vibrance.
That script, there's nothing in that script about why she's good at what she does. And that is fucking vexing.
Yes.
It's like a little journey, but you never see what, okay, I need to stop talking about this. But Mrs. Maisel, the thing is that, like, a lot of people have had trouble with just how low stakes Mrs. Maisel is and that she just sort of, like, breezes through things. And at the end of the second season, my mom, and I felt like what my mom liked about it was that it was a non-dangerous place with pretty dresses and, like, playful city Judaism of a sort that she never experienced. But, like, my mom's, the darkness of what she perceived moving out from that was, like, a really interesting insight into who she was. And I was excited about it. And I was excited about the way that she reads and identifies with, but also judges those characters. And I need to try to, they don't always work. I took her to The Favorite and she was, there was too much lesbianism in that movie for her.
too much gross, like leg pus and lesbianism.
She's fine with leg pus. She does not want two named characters touching each other's pussies.
Really?
Yes.
Guy's mom.
I've worked on her as hard as I can.
It's funny that my mom was really into Mrs. Maisel.
Uh-huh.
So my parents were, because we talked about it on Christmas. I was like, maybe you should watch it. And they're like, we've binged both seasons in like 2 days. And they're far from being, you know, Jewish city folk.
Right.
All they are is like, my dad played piano for Tony Shalhoub's birthday once.
But like, the thing is, I feel like women our mom's age just have a nostalgia for late 50s structured dresses.
Mm-hmm. That can really, yeah, define the moment more than anything else.
Tara, you got any more?
Okay, yes. I also learn more commercial jingles and... one of my great pleasures that has zero pain attached to it, zero politics, zero anything, my pure pleasures has always been commercial jingles, and I get most of mine from the ID channel, obviously, because I'm always watching true crime stuff. And so the Barnes Firm Injury Attorneys, I have sung that jingle.
1-800-888.
Savino and Barnes, Injury Attorneys, 800-888-8888.
Don't wait. Call 8.
I have sung that with my spouse a million times. I've also sung it at Josh several times. And then I also, there's an Outback Steakhouse commercial on there that doesn't have a jingle, but just like, I just kind of love how repulsively macho that voice is.
Do you like big juicy steak? Do you like freshly steamed lobster? Do you like the word and? Then you'll love Outback Steak and Lobster. Backed by popular demand, only $15.99. So hurry in now. Outback Steakhouse. Aussie rules.
Harkening back to my affection for gross macho things, I like plenty of them, like the Outback Steakhouse thing, which I did this like really foul rendition of it at the last Josh when Hannah Gadsby was in the, an Australian herself, was in the audience.
Can we get a taste?
Oh, absolutely. You got a little stick of shrimp.
I love that, like, that's your version of Australian.
Yeah.
It's not like Australian. Steak and shrimp.
Look, I hate to do this, but would everyone like to hear the jingle for the local farmer's market and auction house
yes,
in Sacramento
yes.
from the mid-1980s? Take a peek at Denio's farmer's market and auction. Take a peek at Denio's this week. Take a peek at Denio's farmer's market and auction. Take a peek at Denio's. Denio's this week.
That's a good one.
It was. It is something so magical that a thing I wouldn't otherwise remember is now lodged in my head forever.
It's terrible. It's just sort of like, I feel that probably in my hospice bed, I'll be like, Pete Ellis Dodge, Long Beach Freeway, Firestone Exit, Southgate. You know?
It's such a great art form.
But the ability to lodge an off-ramp or a phone number in your head,
yeah.
Especially a fucking accident attorney, where you're going to be like, oh my God, this just happened. Wait, I know one number that is appropriate for this.
I would love to actually hear like some of our Rocketeers like call our voicemail, which is essentially, isn't that your mom's voicemail guy? It's a 530
yes,
number.
Yes.
And
it is in Sacramento, so not affected by the federal shutdown.
Yeah, it's a 530-237-4108. And Rocketeers, if you could all sing a little snippet of that jingle that will lodge itself into your mind so that on your deathbed, that's all you're going to be able to iterate. Please do.
Oh, and also you could go on the Pop Rocket Facebook page and like put the jingle there if it's on YouTube or if it's there's a commercial on.
What the fuck are you doing managing our social better than I do, Tara?
Everyone shut up. I want you guys to... That would be the best. What if there's a thread that was entirely jingles?
You guys, yeah. I'm being suffocated by lesbian efficiency. They've taken over the operation of my organs.
Someone unvelcro my divas. I need a break.
All right, Karen, you got another resolution?
It's a very simple resolution, and it's one, I mean, you know, I know that there are some of you Rocketeers out there who don't mind me being stuck in my particular stylistic loop around popular music, but also as a scholar of popular music, music, I think it behooves me to be more proactive about like seeking out new music and not just getting stuck in the groove of like the things that I already like, listening to those things over and over again, or just listening to what iHeartRadio tells me to listen to, because I feel like I'm too susceptible. And frankly, like a lot of my friends and colleagues who are music critics, you know, as I read their end of year lists and listen to their end of year playlists on Spotify, like the Slate Music Club's, you know, 100 Best Songs of 2018, or my friend Eric Weisbard, who used to run the pop conference in Seattle for so long, put together his own compilation, all the consensus critical best albums of 2018. And I just put that stuff on shuffle and I'm like, how did I miss all this stuff? You know, I know that I can't be a completist, my 45-year-old self who's running around being professional and whatnot all the time, doesn't have many occasions to just kind of like do the equivalent of crate digging these days. But I really want to be able to hear this music, you know, before it's like at the outlet store, you know?
Are there enough gems in there? Like when you go, like when you put the top albums of 2018 on a shuffle list, like, is there more wheat than chaff?
There is way more wheat than chaff. And that's like what's been surprising to me. I think that it's, I feel like it makes me feel like I'm sleeping on something that I'm supposed to be an expert at, you know? Mm. And I think, you know, there are like, five of the albums, I mean, that I'm into, that I'm going to bring to our Pop Tart Awards, I really love, and they're on that list. But there's a whole other world of stuff, like, that probably are in mine and Margaret's Venn diagram of, like, pop music tastes that none of us brought to the table in Pop Rocket this year. And I want to do better by you, Rocketeers, and bring some other stuff to your ears as I bring it to mine.
Mine, in reaction to that, is I've previously been challenged to not do cop-outs on my jams, and I frequently do cop-outs on my jams. My jam today, cop-out. But I vow that between now and the Feast of the Passover, I will have jams that are recent releases, that are things that I have searched out and found. The Rocketeers and you and Margaret and Winter do such a good job of bringing me summer jams, like bounteous, overflowing summer jams, that I will do my research for Q1 through a little bit of Q2 of this year, and then I will just rest and relax. but my real resolution is a big one, and it is I'm going to react less, and I'm going to make more. In a world full of pop culture, like, and so full of places for us to have opinions, I have been doing a lot of having opinions over the course of the past year, to the extent that in my goddamn book, it's half stories about me and half sort of like criticism and commentary on other art. And one of the things I want to do is stop writing essays like a responsible college student about the things that I see, and to integrate the lessons learned into the jokes I tell and the things that I write. Because I think it is very easy for us to have a take, but it is hard to make. And so fewer takes, more makes is my like big pop culture resolution for 2019. It will probably happen as much as the catching up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills did.
That's a good one. Although I would also say I think that we all should make better room in our hearts for good criticism. And to be able to, you know, because I think that a take versus the beauty of real criticism and real cultural criticism, which is, you know, like my bread and butter. It's like the world that I chose to enter, you know, but
that resolution was personal criticism, Karen.
No. But I'm just saying, but I'm just saying you write beautiful criticism.
Thank you. And,
you know, My Life as a Goddess is beautiful criticism. So, you know, if you fail at this resolution, I won't be sad.
Also, let me just say that there is one piece of criticism I am very much looking forward to in the coming year. It's a little book by the name of something about Karen Carpenter.
Why Karen Carpenter Matters. It's coming soon.
I am very excited. Pre-order today. Sorry. You got anything?
My one more pop culture resolution was to go to see movies more regularly. There were so many good ones at the end of this year, including The Favorite, which just was like one of the best things I've ever seen. I now am committing to just going. I'd like to go once a week. It'll probably be every other week. I missed a bunch that I wanted to see this last year. I still haven't seen Support the Girls, Shoplifters, Blindspotting, Annihilation, Black Klansman, and I'm still going to see all of them, but I really want to go to the theater. I've just been enjoying the theater, particularly the Lamely in Pasadena, so much.
So Support the Girls came to VOD so quickly, I ended up watching it there. But it is a different viewing experience than sort of like letting those ladies own a screen and own 2 hours of my life.
I went to the theater to see Roma and then heard that it was on Netflix, and I was like, but I want to see it in the theater.
Yeah.
That's where I want to view those images. I want to see as many as possible there. Yeah.
We'll go try to see more movies with you.
Yes, please.
Okay, Karen, final one. Wrap it all up for us.
Final one, and it is sort of pop culture related, and I know that it's like related to this, the thing that people are like, Karen needs to stop talking about food, but I'm going to talk about food one more time here.
Fuck those people.
Yeah,
fuck
why are you people. Being asked to stop?
Exactly. So for Christmas, Sarah gave me this beautiful Japanese barbecue cookbook. And so I've resolved Julie and Julia style to make or master at least one recipe from the book a month. I don't have the time to gather all the ingredients or to do that level of marinating on a weekly basis. I have a very dense schedule of teaching this year. But, you know, I want to make sure that I have a dinner party once a month and make one of these beautiful Japanese barbecue recipes.
I would like to come to one of those.
Of course.
Will I call you Mr. Robata? Probably.
You know, I'm going to try to do it without like getting uber fussy around like, am I going to create like a beautiful little charcoal pit for you? Probably not. But I'm going to master the sauces because one of the things I love about this cookbook, it is about mastering like certain things that you can make in advance, like marinades and rubs, which is like how I got into cooking to begin with. And also it's about like the quality of ingredient or the cut of this or that. And so I would love to do a little Japanese BBQ gathering like once a month. And yes, you Tara can come.
Okay, so those are our pop culture resolutions. We want to know what yours are. Go to the Facebook group. I realize that Tara has already plugged the Facebook group and is doing more responsible work than I am, but I can still say go to the Facebook group and tell us what your resolutions are. And we'll check back in on these in a couple of years if the cancer hasn't taken any of us. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this.
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, DJ, scholar, and journalist.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, music supervisor and stiletto devotee. And we host Heat Rocks, a podcast where we invite our favorite musicians, writers, and scholars to talk about the albums that have changed their lives.
Morgan, what exactly is a heat rock?
It's a record that's like hot fire, combustible.
Basically, just a really, really good album.
We've taken a deep dive into Nigerian funk from the 70s.
He kind of had like a bad reputation in town as just being like a sketchy dude. And he was just making music that for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that.
1980s teen comedy soundtracks.
This soundtrack always felt the same to me as like when I would find a great blazer at a thrift store that I could, and I was like, oh, this is going to be me now.
We've talked about Prince, Boys to Men, Kendrick Lamar, and everything in between. Heat Rocks, every Thursday here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Sky Brown, and with me in the studio are
Tara Jepsen
and Karen Tongson.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask the question, what is your current jam? I haven't asked the question in a while. Karen's been asking the question. I have to say, I'm out of practice. Karen, would you like to ask the question, what is your current jam of us?
Guy Branum, what is your jam? You're going to go first this time. You always get to go last.
My current jam is a cop-out, but also it is the way I feel coming back. It is so lovely to have you guys in my life processing and consuming pop culture with me. I really appreciate it. Also, last time I heard this song was in a dance club in Amsterdam. And there's just something, it's important to see your European twinks being re-exposed to the culture they need to know. You know, I need to know that, like, European twinks know all the words to Crystal Water songs and have a relationship with the arc of Janet Jackson.
Yeah. I mean, and that song is, I think, now 22 years old.
Absolutely.
It's old enough to take on a date. At a proper bar. Tara Rae Jepsen.
Yes.
Do you have a jam this week?
I do. I have a song. It's called Going Back. It's by a band called Hey Jelly. They're out of Austin, Texas. It's Jenny Hoyston and Ellie Erickson, who used to be in Erasurada, which was an incredible no-wave band from San Francisco. It was also Sarah Jaffe and Bianca Sparta. But this is just Ellie and Jenny and their new band. I saw them live this last year in LA somewhere downtown, and they were incredible. I love how Jenny writes songs. So this is a clip from Going Back by Hey Jelly.
You see, there's so much music like this that the young people are listening to. Mm-hmm. That's like your Robins, your other EDM people. But it's great that these people with this kind of like really no wave indie legacy are, you know, here
yeah.
for us. And
they're incredible. And both such highly skilled musicians and songwriters. And I just get excited that they're still writing songs and doing such cool stuff.
It felt like a trip to the Esprit outlet store.
Oh, yes, in San Francisco, you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Off of 3rd Street, you mean?
But isn't that how life should sound?
Yes.
Anyway.
1,000%.
Well, my jam this week, actually, you know, it's a jam for the new year, even though it's a very old song from 1972, a year before I was actually born.
Oh, that was the year I was born.
And you know, it's by the great Labi Sifra, who is, you know, this wonderful personality, not just a musician, not just a British-born singer-songwriter, but also a poet, essayist, somebody who's a working musician, openly gay in that era and onward into the present, the son of immigrants and an atheist, and somebody who should have really never succeeded given, you know, yeah. all of the strikes against them. And they made really beautiful music, make beautiful work. In fact, there's actually a TED Talk, recent TED Talk by Labi Sifra, like reading poetry. And anyway, this song, some of you might recognize it because those master manipulators over at This Is Us played it a couple seasons ago, but this is not why I chose this song. It's, you know, I just was reminded of its existence recently when it kind of popped on in a shuffle. And to me, it's a song that exudes a certain like melancholia, but also possibility, radiance, and it's a kind of motif I want to lean into for 2019, and it's Watch Me.
Watch me when you call my name. See me sparkle, see me flame. Sing a song and play a game. Oh, I'm so.
It's got that beautiful, like, kind of like what we think of as indie rock wall of sound, like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe even sort of Animal Collective-y or something like that now.
You can smell a half-hour dramedy
behind
it.
Well, also, give me stack 45% melancholia and yes. give me 55% hope. Like, once you take it in the other direction, I don't want to listen to that. Like, those 70s songs, nothing can, like, just, like, squeegee your soul, like, mm. like 70s stuff like that. But that is just, like, a soupçon over the line to hopeful.
Yeah.
Everyone should listen to Labi Sifra and seek out their work. And it's also just be like in a space of opening and learning about artists who are being brought back in these different ways, but who we don't know enough about. Anyway, that's my last 2019 resolution.
Well, Karen Tongson, thank you so much for doing the hard work of hosting while I was gone.
Well, we rotated hosting.
Okay. Well, Karen, as the only member of the panel who's here right now, thanks for keeping the ship afloat while I was gone. I really appreciate it, and I've missed you guys. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, which is hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Tara Jepsen, who did a solid job of helping host today, let's be honest. Tara, people can come to the Josh Show by following you on Instagram.
Yes, my Instagram handle is at Captain Dingbat, same with Twitter. And yes, I always advertise those things there, and people can message me and I'll send you the address.
And what else, what other works of yours can people access?
Well, I have a company called Pave the Way Skateboards with Miriam Kleinstahl, who's an illustrator out of Berkeley who does all the Rad Women books. And we just did a collab with Unity Skateboards, which is a Bay Area queer skateboard company that focuses on queer people of color and are just the best people. So a lot of good vibes there. You can always find me at Pave the Way Skateboards or at Captain Dingbat.
Look, to the extent that this encourages people to trespass or otherwise do dangerous things on public monuments or buildings, I don't approve of it, okay? Like, they're grinding their way down steps. I'm not comfortable with it, but all of Tara's writing and creative stuff and any art, I'm cool with.
Her novel, Like a Dog. Yes. Go get it.
I'm definitely getting it. I mean, I'm
City Light Books. City Lights Books.
And Karen Thompson. Thanks so much.
Of course. It's great to be here. Looking forward to the whole fam being back. Maybe my voce will be completely recovered at some point.
I mean, it sounds pretty recovered now, but there was a beautiful moment when I had dreams of like smoke and you laying on a piano earlier in the show that are just dashed now.
Oh, that'll happen.
Or being like in the new Serial Mom.
Fucking Kathleen.
Pussy Willow.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Muzo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, you should make it one of your New Year's resolutions for 2019 to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Any review is fine, but 5-star is good. Everyone needs to really step up. Margaret is out sick this week. That means that not enough people have been reviewing us. Please remember that your reviews give her life and sustenance and keep her going. And Karen is barely over this bronchial thing. We cannot let the absence of reviews start affecting more members. I mean, Margaret's our shock troops, but, you know, Karen's our artillery. She's in the back.
I'm on the ground here, and it does look urgent.
All right. Our thanks go out to Moose589. They said, smart, witty conversation about all things pop culture. I need a new podcast to add to my feed, and this fits right in into the lineup. I really like the diversity of the panel, and I like podcasts that have a friendly tone and are comfortable but focused. Subscribe. I don't think we're friendly or focused, but thank Moose589 for being generous. Do you have anything to say about this week's show? Let us know by calling the Pop Rocket voicemail line, 530-237-4108. It doesn't even have to be a comment on this week's show. Leave us a jingle. We want to know what your favorite TV jingle is, and we don't want you to tell us. We want you to sing us. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. And as always, we have our magnificent Instagram account, the name of which I do not remember.
At Pop Rocket Podcast. Guy Branum actually instead, and the Pop Rocket Podcast Instagram retweeted your tea set and your selfies from London.
Oh, that's exciting. I pretended that I Instagrammed like a millennial for like a couple of days and then I failed. We are a production of MaximumFun.org. Our show is edited by Shana Deloria. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, who I have known far too long.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.